It's time for your weekly dose of Wayne's Comics.
Welcome to episode 152 of the Wayne's Comics Podcast. I'm so glad you're listening because I've got a very special interview with Eric Dean Seaton, the creator of a trio of graphic novels called Legend of the Montamagi, a very special comic series that I enjoy. It's got everything in it, from heroes to villains to all kinds of things going on in New York City, and it addresses one of my very favorite subjects, and that's diversity in comics. Eric talks about how the book came to be, about the characters, and what we might see from him in the future regarding this series. Oh boy, can't wait for that. There's a lot to get to, so let's get on with the show. Welcome to the podcast, Eric Dean Seaton, creator of a great series of graphic novels I really enjoyed called Legend of the Montamagi. How are you doing today, Eric?
I'm doing great. How are you?
Good. It's good to talk with you about this book.
Thank you.
It's a really good story. I really enjoyed the characters. I thought the writing was really strong. I thought the characters were very vibrant. And one of the things that I mentioned in an email to you guys was the fact that I enjoyed the fact that the diverse characters don't necessarily have to fill a costume that already exists, which drives me insane when I see things like that. I can't understand why there are all these wonderful stories that can be told that you don't necessarily have to follow in somebody else's footsteps. You can create something new, and it looks to me like you've created a whole new mythology.
I have. I've tried. It took 6 long years, but yes, it's an entire 3,000-year-old mythology, a new world, a completely different story, and hopefully something that people can really enjoy.
So where did the idea come from? How did you come up with the idea?
It's so funny. I grew up in Cleveland, Ohio. My dad lived out of town, and he would come home. So he worked out of town. He would come home on the weekends, and he would take me to comic book shops. So I grew up reading all the comic books, and I just always wanted to do one. And I loved so many different books, but I actually never really saw a character that, say, looked like me. I mean, there were a few, there was Black Panther and a few, but they were never really prominent. So when I decided I wanted to do one, that was the only character that I had to have. But making up the story, it's just from the love of movies and TV and epic stories like Lord of the Rings and all that. I just felt like, what could be different? What do we not see? And I just started creating this world, and it just kept growing and growing and growing, and it took flight. And the moment that, you know, without ruining it, the main character is called Montamagi. That's his race. So, and he's the last of his race. So once I made that connection, you know, instead of just having him called Nightman or, you know, Super Dude or whatever the thing is, he's really taking the name of his race. It just grounded it, because it just made it like he's taking on something important. He's taking on his heritage, and it just grew from there.
So. See, I don't understand why other people haven't done that kind of story before you have, because it makes absolute sense to me to do that. And yet we don't see people do that. A lot of people seem to struggle with diverse characters in comics, and I can't figure it out.
Well, I think one thing is, and I would like to make it clear, is that, he's diverse. All the characters are diverse, but the focus is about the story and the adventure that they're going on, not like, you know, he's African-American and he's getting drugs out of the hood and all that. I mean, the caveat is, I made him the lead character in American because I am, and I'd never really see that many heroes like that. But, you know, is there any reference to it? No. I mean, the race is from Africa, so there are subtle things. Everything is subtle, but it's really all story-driven, you know. Mm-hmm. And I think maybe in the past there have been some other things, but I think maybe they've been so focused on putting the race in front that it not only alienates people, but it puts it in a smaller box.
Because
for example, we've got in at Marvel, they've got the Ultimate Spider-Man, who's Miles Morales. He's half Hispanic, half black. And it seems like that character tends to focus a lot on, or the stories anyway, seem to focus on his race and things like that. And I just can never figure that out. I think you're absolutely right. The thing that really drew me into the books, and I was so grateful I got to read all three, was the story. It was the pulling in there of the making of things that were important that happened. I really liked it. I liked the fact that there were a lot of different kinds of people involved in the story.
Right.
You know, Elijah Alexander, who's the main guy, and it's basically all set in New York, which aren't all comics set in New York eventually.
Right. Yeah. It's just such a mecca. As you read, you find out there's a reason for it, and in the future books, there's a reason for it. But yeah, the skyline, it's such a diverse place. I know, it just seemed easier.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, it's not a bad idea, yeah. And it always makes me wonder why in New York we don't see more heroes like the Montemagi or something like that going on around there. But as far as the story goes, you know, because you're doing this a little differently than most comics do. Most comics appear in monthly issues.
Yes,
and
I did not want to do a monthly issue. I wanted it. Number one, I wanted it to feel like an event, each book to feel like an event, and I also felt like it's such a big story with, you know, so many flashbacks and so all-encompassing. I thought it would hurt it to have to wait every 30 days to get a new issue. You know, I felt like if someone's rolling, you know, and they're really enjoying the story, you know, just turn the page. There's the next chapter. So, I mean, each book has a beginning, a middle, end. Each book has a cliffhanger until you get to the last book with, you know things to try to be resolved. But I just thought that was a better way to go. And I also thought it would be easier for me to get it in so many different places because I have a day job as a television director. So, you know, it just felt like it easier. I could go to Barnes & Noble, I could go to Amazon, I could go to comic book shops. And here was, a big, rich story of 216 pages. You know, there's a really good price. Someone could sink their teeth in and give them 2 months, and then there's another one, and give them another 2 months, and then there's the last one.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And, you know, I love graphic novels for that reason. And a lot of people are turning away from the individual issues for just the things you're stating. It's hard to catch up. Not only that, you have to find places that are going to have the books you want. And if it's not one of the major companies, sometimes it's difficult to track down issues. And I myself have driven for miles and miles and miles trying to find individual issues that I wanted to complete like a set or finish a story. Have you found the selling of this? Because haven't you created your own company? It's called And Action Entertainment, which I really think that's great.
It is my own company. I did create it. And I found that it's been very receptive with the graphic novel version of it. It's surprisingly, people go, oh, I didn't know it was a graphic novel. I thought it was just a comic book. I think people are so used to it just being, you know, a 32-page book, you know, that it surprises them. But for me and for what I wanted to do, I just felt it was better. And the ownership, the creating my own company, was simply because I direct for a lot of big major studios, and I just see what they do with owning their own property. It's just such an advantage that they have, that they can recycle it and it can be different things. And nowadays everything's kind of gone away from personal ownership. So that was just a choice. Like, you know, people are like, why didn't you ever submit it? And I was like, you know, I work for people that own everything. It's like, you should see what they can do. Just ownership is just, it's just something that's rare. And I just thought that I just wanted to experience that.
Well, it's a great series of graphic novels. They had them at New York Comic Con. You had them.
Mm-hmm.
And now, has the first one actually hit the streets yet at the local comic shops?
Yes, it came out October 8th, and it did pretty good at comic book shops. But, you know, with independent books, comic shops order to sell, not to stock. So people really have to go in and request it, you know, because they'll order 10 Spider-Mans because eventually somebody's going to make another Spider-Man movie or somebody's going to make a Spider-Man video game. They'll eventually get rid of them. With independents, you don't really know. This is another reason why I didn't want to do a monthly book, because, you know, you don't know. You don't know if they're going to come back the next month, or it's, but a full, you know, graphic novel, you see, oh, wow, I've read 200, 216 pages, and this is a good story, and oh, the next one's coming in 2 months. So, yeah, so comic book shops are good. I just have to tell people all the time, encourage them to please tell your local comic book shop, please order it, so they'll have extra copies, because they'll order the copies, and then everybody that wanted them got them, and then it looks like they're not there.
So if they wanted to get Volume 1, they should still go to their local comic shop and tell them to get them. Can local stores order them, like back order them?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. We just actually got a when I got back from New York, I had a back order for some books from Diamond. So, yes, they can actually definitely go and order. Book 2 orders have to go in, I think, today or tomorrow, and then book 3 will be in December, and then we're going to resolicit the books also in March, all 3 books, so if anybody missed them, because with each book coming every 2 months, then word of mouth is spreading, and people are more and more people are finding out about it. It'll give people a chance to come out, but they should definitely request it at their comic book shops.
Okay, now before we get into the story, and really want to discuss that some. You also have a website too called Legend of the Montemagi, and can you order the book through there? Let's say that the store just can't seem to get it for whatever reason.
Yes.
Can you get them there?
Yes, absolutely. You can get them through us. We actually having a Christmas special. If you order, I think it's before December 12th, you can get all 3 books, you know, including the 3rd book, which doesn't come out until February, early. So you can get all 3 books early. But yes, you can order all of them from our website. And if you go to the website, which is legendofthemantamagi.com, it also, if you into digital, it has all the different ways you can get the book. It's available on every format and every platform.
Oh, really? You can get it digitally?
Yes. You can get it digitally through Kobe, Kindle, iTunes, Comicology. It's available on every format.
Oh, great. Well, that's good to hear. So you really thought this well through, because a lot of people, there are a lot of books I really like, and I asked them, can you get it through Comixology? Well, no, we haven't worked that out yet. But you've got all this stuff all worked out, and that's great.
Oh, yeah. Everything's all worked out. All the books are available. Comixology doesn't do pre-sales, so you'll see book 2 listed the day it comes out in stores, which is December 10th, and you'll see book 3 listed February 11th, but book 1 is listed right now at Comicology, and on iTunes and Kindle and Kobe, all 3 books are listed right now. Book 2, 3 are pre-orders, and book 1 is available right now.
Great. Well, I enjoyed all 3. I got to read all 3, and I loved them all. And I was so glad I got a chance to get them from you, because I did say at the time when I talked with you that I thought this was a book that I might enjoy, and I was so right. It just drew me in, and I just, once I got started, I didn't get out of the books until I got to the very end of the 3rd volume, which I really liked.
Oh, so. That makes me feel so good. Thank you. I really, really appreciate it. Yeah, that's good. It's always great to hear.
Yeah, it's a good story with great characters and a lot of twists and turns that you don't expect as you go along the way, and that always draws me in, so I really love that.
Oh, good. Yeah, I always tell everybody, don't give away the twist at the end of book 1, and don't give away the twist at the end of book 2, but it does surprise people, and a lot of people that are always looking for twists, they're like, oh, I didn't see that coming, so that made me feel good. That made me feel really good, yeah.
That's if you know what's coming, why bother?
I know. Absolutely. And it's funny because the twist at the end of book 1 really wasn't there as we were making the books. But as I got to the end, I felt like I just needed something, to really catapult book 2. And I moved it up. It was actually happened a little later. Which is funny when you talk about the stories, like creating books, book 2 and book 3 were very easy to do. Book 1 was the hardest one to do, because that original story, like when you do the flashbacks, when you tell the origin, it's very hard. Mm-hmm. Very, very hard.
Mm-hmm. Well, you got it down pretty well.
Okay.
It doesn't seem like you haven't written any other comics before this, have you?
No. This is the first big graphic novel series I've done, and it just came from years and years of working as a director and, working with writers and telling stories and seeing what people like and what works and what doesn't work. And so I was just able to compile it into this story and so far so good.
Yeah, well, great. Well, you're off to a great start, I think, and I really enjoyed it very much. Let's talk a little bit about the characters, because to me, those were some of the real vibrant things going on there. I cared about these people and what happened to them. And, you start off with the main character, who's an assistant district attorney in New York City.
Right.
His name is Elijah Alexander. And of course, you got to always ask, did you pattern any of these people after individuals you know? Was this sort of a thing that you read about? I mean, what kind of research or something did you do to make these characters?
Well, it's funny. Most of them are just characters that I really kind of wanted to see. It's funny, when I'm at comic conventions, I always do the pitch, and I say he's a shallow conceited district attorney of New York, and I go, so it's a true story, and everybody laughs and all that. But it was really just what would interest me as a character, like who would I find interesting, and it was really just about this journey. And I felt like, you know, when you get a hero, you know, in movies in the 80s, 90s, and the movie, you have to see the hero, even though he's a bad guy, he'd have to save a cat or something, just so you see there's something good. And I was like, oh, this is so contrived. I was like, I would love to see a guy, you know, who's doing good, but there's reasons why he is the way he is, and you take the time and you find out why he's this way, and then you see if he can evolve. And with the women, with Sydney and the other characters, it was just important for me to have really strong women characters. That was the main thing.
Well, you and I are on the same page with that, because I have this terrible thing about female characters that end up being, you know, two-dimensional. Seems like a lot of women characters have to be very maternal in nature, and, you know, men can be a scoundrel, men can be a scientist, men can be a good guy, a bad guy, anywhere in between, but women have to be very, you know, within a very narrow range. And so to see the various women characters that you did was really good, and I did like the mother. I thought that Elijah's mother was great fun. Is it pronounced Mariah?
Yeah, Mariah, yes. Uh-huh.
Mariah Alexander. Uh-huh. I liked her really well, and I thought that the whole notion that you introduced about the fact of how she educated Elijah into understanding about his own background was, I thought, really great. She kind of slid it in past him. He didn't realize what she was doing and educating him about.
Oh, yeah. That was the key. That was really key with her. It's like a motherly figure, and they have a special bond between mother and son. It was just really, really important for me, and really to fill that out. With Sydney and Mariah, well, Sydney, most importantly, she had to be equal to the hero, and you never see that. You know, in every superhero story, the female lead is always just either following along, and she's a damsel in distress. I didn't want to do that at all. I wanted her to be equal, which is, even though the book's called Legend of Mantamaji, you learn just as much about the Sanctuaries, which are the sisters to the Mantamaji. I just felt that was important, too, like just to really have these strong women, something you haven't seen. And I always tell everybody, it's like, I used to love the X-Files when I was younger, and, you know, it was always, you know, Mulder was the one that was always into it, and Scully was the skeptic and all that. And I said, no, my female character has to be a Mulder. She has to really be into it, really believe, you know, that was more interesting to me.
Mm-hmm. And she's a police detective, too, which is kind of interesting.
Yeah.
I liked the way you set that up, too.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. Well, it really gave her a chance to really be involved in everything. And also, you know, it gave us a chance to see, because we have police and everything, you know, our way in, like, oh, what are the police doing with all this stuff going on? Like, what's their take on it? So she answered that bill.
And that whole group, you know, her interaction with him is a lot of fun too, because they play off of each other so smartly. It's really, I could really visualize this like on a TV screen or a movie screen at some point.
Oh, good. Yeah, yeah, that was important. Their relationship was important, and even Elijah's relationship with his mother, how, you know, she protected him, but then they would, you know, she still give him a little hard time, you know, just to ground him, you know, so his head didn't get too big. Yeah, those were two things that I really wanted to express, and I'm glad they came across.
And then there's the family friend Noah, who I enjoyed, because he was a little, he, like everybody else, there are things about him that we don't understand when things get started.
Mm-hmm.
And I really enjoyed that about the characters, was that as we have to continue on and explore and learn more about them as things happen. And not a lot of comics do that. You know, you'll have Batman will have to do the same things every month, and have to be the same person in the same circumstance, because somebody else might have to come around and take up the story at that point. But you telling a story that had a beginning, a middle, and an end, you know, you were able to set these different people up as fleshed out characters, and I think Noah was one of the best as far as that goes.
Oh, great. Yeah, yeah. He's very much a rock, in all three of the books, you know, even in the third book, he, and it was important that that I have that kind of guy that is, you know, the guiding eye, and at the same time has his own motivations for why he's doing things, mm-hmm. which are mysterious, you know. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Now, of course, we've got to talk a little bit about magic, because magic itself is a character,
right,
in these kinds of things. And I always complain bitterly about books in which magic is something that you get painted into a corner as a writer, and you decide, uh-oh, I've got to get out of this corner. How do I do it? And you come up with this thing that's never been even hinted at before.
Mm-hmm.
And suddenly out of the blue, you decide, well, now magic can do this.
Mm-hmm.
And you don't do that, which I was so happy to read. I always like to talk about the Dresden File books and things like that, in which Mr. Butcher sets everything up ahead of time. And I thought you did a really good job, especially like in the first volume, of setting up things as they were going to happen as they move forward.
Uh-huh.
I really liked that. As I went back and looked at it a second time, I really began to realize how you did that setting up, and I thought that was really well done.
Oh, good. Yeah. I agree with you 100% on the magic out of nowhere. I'm all for rules. Like, you have to have the rules.
Yeah.
And I was definitely going to make sure that we set what the rules are and we stuck to them. And that was really important, so I'm glad, yeah. Because you're right, there are these stories where all these things happen, and you're excited, they get to the end, and then out of nowhere, wait, what did they do? And sometimes you don't even get it, like, wait, how did they do that, you know? But,
yeah.
So I definitely did not want that, yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So let's talk about the bad folks as we get into this too. Brother Hope,
yeah.
He was just ideal. I could have almost seen him as like a TV preacher at some
mm-hmm.
point, you know,
mm-hmm.
doing stuff. And not to say the TV preachers are bad people,
right.
But every once in a while you run across them and you hear stories about them of what terrible things have happened and what things they've done. You kind of get a sense that, you know, they get lost in themselves.
Right.
And so Brother Hope, and he's got this, what he calls the House of Hope.
Yes.
He's actually become a part of New York society, and he's become this incredible, you know, person that people all respect and want to be a part of, and they want to, you know, they want his support all the time. I just thought that you might actually be leaning a little bit towards the kinds of things we see in modern society today when you were writing him.
Absolutely. Everything is related to something that we see or have heard about. And you're right. And his intentions in his mind, his intentions are good in his mind. Mm-hmm. You know, in his mind, he's helping society. Or society's got to a point where, you know, it's time for him to come in and fix things. So, yes, I definitely have heard of stories like that and people like that and those situations. And I definitely wanted to make something that people can relate to when they're reading, and they go, oh, yeah, yeah, this feels like something like this could happen. Yeah, absolutely.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Now, even the Montemagi are themselves a diverse group. And, of course, we have to get to Sirach. Is that how that's pronounced?
Yes, yeah, Sirach, but yes.
Sirach.
Sirach.
Okay. So the Sirach character is – he's kind of the opposite number to Elijah
mm-hmm.
on many levels.
Mm-hmm.
And the thing – finding out about him – is intriguing as well. We come to understand his desire for power and what he intends to do with it and things like that. Did Sirach have any kind of did you have a purpose when you created that character, or what you wanted the character to accomplish?
Yes, he's supposed to be. The funny thing is, in a room where if Elijah and Sirach were sitting together, they sound very similar. They're very, very, very much, you know, about themselves and believe that there's something that they're after. And so I thought he would make the perfect polar opposite, because at the end of the day, they're you know, enemies. You know, mm-hmm. you know, the way they're both going about something is one's good and one's bad. You know, their methods. Mm-hmm. So yes, definitely. I just tried to find the most interesting, you know, type of powerful character I could find. And if you'll notice, I did little things like he's taller than Elijah, he's bigger than the mm-hmm. Montemagi, you know. Mm-hmm. I figured he's a larger than life character and a larger than life person, and mm-hmm. you know, in a different world, had he not been evil, it's somebody Elijah probably would have wanted to be like, you know. But that thing, like, you know, look beyond the surface, you may think mm-hmm. you want to be like this person, but this person is bad.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's a great thing about that. Now, you also would not only have individuals but groups.
Uh-huh.
And, you know, we talked about the Montemagi. You have, but there's also a group called the Enlightened. And you mentioned the Sanctuants,
right,
and stuff like that. Do you want to mention a little bit more about the Sanctuants and the Enlightened?
Yes. The Sanctuants are the sisters to the Montemagi. They are equal in every way, even though their powers are different. And in the lore of the book, the Enlightened, who came from, we're not sure, were a group that came to Earth or from Earth and loved man so much that they ended up mating with man, and the firstborn son would, of any union, would become a Montemagi. The firstborn female would become a Sanctuary, and together both the Sanctuary and the Montemagi would protect mankind from the forces of evil. So the thing about the Sanctuary is that in this series we learn a little bit about them. We know that they are the center where all this started, but it'll be later series that we really find out, you know, maybe the Montemagi and the Sanctuary weren't the first group that they created. You know, maybe to the Montemagi and the Sanctuary, they're beloved, but in other places, maybe not so much.
Mm-hmm. Well, I was glad to hear you said there might be other stories coming down the road.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Yeah, we're working on some more right now. So hopefully they will we'll have them in the next years or two, but definitely going to delve into this world more, and there's even still more character development with the characters that survive.
Now, there's one other group that I really got a kick out of, and that was the New World Knights.
Yes.
Basically a street gang that is blossoming beyond even their own abilities.
Absolutely, yep. And they're decided by, the funny thing is, if you notice, they're different sects of street gangs. They're that were recruited, and they all have different colors for wherever they may reside. But yes, they are elusive and high tech and not what they appear, not what you would think of when you think of a normal street gang, and they are they are quietly taking over the city.
Mm. Mm. See, all these wonderful things, all these forces come together, and that's where all this stuff really hits really well. Now, I do want to talk, before I let you go, about the art, because the art is really strong.
Yes.
I really enjoyed the art a lot. How did you and Brandon, is it pronounced Palas?
Yeah, Palas.
Palas.
Yes.
But how did you and Brandon get together and start working on it?
It's funny. As a director, I have a lot of meetings with different things, and I have a concept artist that helps me out. And he does really good work, and I was pitching him this idea, this graphic novel series 6 years ago, and I asked him, did he want to do it? He said, no. He said, but I have the perfect guy for you. So he gave me Brandon's number, and we started emailing each other, and I sent him a sample of some of the stuff that I wanted to do. And the funny thing is, the samples that he sent back are in the book, are in book one.
Mm.
He was so thorough and so on top of it that they are the flashback pages. When you find out about the Montemagi, that was what he did as a sample, and it hasn't changed. He did it 6 years ago, and it's still as fresh as if he did it last week. And we worked together for 6 years. At night, I would come home from work, and there would be an email from him with some pages, and I'd give him some notes and send them back, and the next day there'd be something else. And the funny thing is, we finally met just at that last, just July at Comic-Con. We had met him then. And my wife always just thinks it's the weirdest story. She's, only guys would do that. But yes, we had the internet and we had email, he's such a good worker, and he's so creative that, and I thought that he lived farther away than what he did. Come to find out, he only lived 20 minutes from me. But at Comic-Con, he came down to sell some books, and he walked up to me and said, Eric? And I said, yes. He said, I'm Brandon. And I was like, oh, nice to meet you. I had no idea what he looked like. He had no idea what I looked like.
Oh, wow.
So, yeah, but we're going to see each other again this weekend. We're doing Stan Lee's Kamikaze in Los Angeles, and he's going to come down on Saturday and spend the day signing books and doing sketches and everything.
Are you going to have a booth there?
Yeah, we have a booth, booth 444 at Kamikaze, and it's at the L.A. Convention Center. So it's funny, I just got back from setting up the booth right now, so we're all set to go.
Oh, wow. Okay,
yeah.
Great.
Yeah.
Now, you guys have probably discussed this, but there are a couple of things about his art that really intrigue me, particularly the use of color.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Elijah is largely, his uniform and his armor is largely blue.
Right.
And then you get to the other characters, each have their own individual color. Yep. Noah is green.
Yep.
This stuff is green. And then we get to the other people, and every one of them seems to be a little different, and that seems to represent something about that. Was that intentional on you guys' part?
Absolutely. Yes, absolutely. Okay. It was intentional. Cyrac is red because it's a powerful color, and green because it's a color that means so many different things, as Noah does, and blue just felt like, you know, the arc that Elijah was going through. But yes, every Manta Magi, is a different color tone with their body armor. And in the lore of the story, it's the first color the child sees when they're born. That's the color that becomes the palette for their life. So parents, you know, the parents can actually show the child a particular color if they want certain things from that child. Elijah saw an image of his father, even though he had never met his father, because his mother wanted him to. His father had a blue tone, blue and gray, and his mother wanted that, so she showed him that. But yes, that was very important to me, like that. It looks real. But every color, it real but vibrant. That was a note I gave him. I said, real but vibrant. And, and he came through, and Andrew Dahlhaus, who also did the coloring, really took it to another level.
Now, you mentioned a character in there I wasn't going to mention until you did. You talk a little bit about Elijah's father, and there's an important phase of the story that has to do with that character. And I love that whole particular sequence a lot, because, you know, in today's society, we lose a lot of contact from parent to child, and to, you know, the fact that he was raised pretty much by his mother, and that the business with the father sort of comes up naturally out of the story. I really enjoyed the fact that there was family as a very important element in the Manta Magi, and I really liked that. I wanted to mention that for sure, because we need more of those kinds of stories, I think, today.
Yeah, really. Oh, absolutely. And you're right. Family is the center, the core of all of it, and it was very important for me to express that and to try and do it in a different way, you know, because you're right. He didn't grow up with his father, but he is every bit his father's son, you know.
So. Just an excellent story. Now, you said the second volume's coming out December 2nd?
Yeah, December 10th.
December 10th.
Okay. And the third one, February 11th.
Okay. Any chance these are going to be collected, like into one big volume later on, or are you going to keep them in separate?
I'm thinking about it. I mean, it would get so, you know, for people, I wanted to keep the books affordable. If they become that popular and people are willing to spend the money, then absolutely. But the one thing I said, look, I'm going to charge, you know, $12 or $14. I want to give people at least 200 pages, because usually people pay people get 100 pages for that amount. So I really wanted to, like, for me, it's really about creating a new world and creating a new opportunity for people to latch onto a character that they can enjoy. So that was the main priority. So would I ever do it? Yes. I'm sure at some point, if it becomes that popular, yes, I will. But if not, I definitely want to keep it accessible for everyone.
Well, I agree with you in the sense that you created this mythology and this whole universe now, which is a new place to go to, and with new stories to read and new characters to meet. So I really think that Legends of the Manta Magi is something that I'm going to be talking about to people and letting people know about, because this is the kind of thing I was hoping for. That, you know, you go to the conventions and you wander through and you see all this wonderful product, and not all of it is all that wonderful, but this was the was really stood out to me, and just loved the way that it was done. I just think that it's, you know, I mentioned about the diversity. I think that's important. We need to read characters about the variety of people that exist, and to have a good, well-told story involved with those characters, I thought was just a great accomplishment. So I really want to thank you for that.
Oh, no, thank you. I really appreciate it. I really appreciate you getting everything and spending the time to read the books and everything. Like that, it means a lot. It really, really does.
Now, anything in the future? You talked about more of the Manta Magi universe. Could that happen sometime soon, or is that going to be probably down the road?
No, yes, it's going to happen soon. I don't have a date yet. I know that we are currently, it's funny, as I was waiting for the call, I was looking at some pages that Brandon's working on now. We are definitely moving ahead with another volume of stories. Right now, it's one, but it could end up being two books, which further will you learn more about the sanctuary, you'll more about the enlightened, and a whole nother group called the Nobles, okay. which should be pretty interesting.
If we want to keep up with you, should we go to the website and follow it there? Or what's the best way to keep up with this?
Please go to the website, legendofthemantamadi.com, or to follow me on Twitter, which is my name, Eric Dean Seaton. And we also have Facebook, which is legendofthemantamadi.com. Listen, I always tell everybody, if you read it, hit me up. I'm email accessible through my website. Let me know what you think about it, what you like, what you didn't like. If you follow me and you go to the website, you will always be updated, because we work on we spend time on the website every day.
Well, it was a great book. It's a great series of graphic novels. And, you know, it's an investment for about like $15 a book, but you get such a great story out of it and such great characters. So I really enjoyed it, and I am looking forward to more as things go forward.
Oh, thank you. Thank you very much. And thank you for talking with me. This is great. Really, really great.
People need dramatic examples to shake them out of apathy, and I can't do that as Bruce Wayne. As a man, I'm flesh and blood. I can be ignored, I can be destroyed, but as a symbol.
Get the latest from the comics universe. News, interviews, previews, and reviews. Listen to the weekly Wayne's Comics Podcast so you can keep reading your comics.
Now at MajorSpoilers.com. That's it for this episode. Be back next week when I'll have another great interview with another wonderful comics creator. But until then, keep reading your comics.